This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Ashton Mara. The nonprofit news organization Climate Central is made up of journalists who report on climate science and scientists who conduct research on the subject. The group recently released a report focused on the increasing number of danger days cities across the country will experience over the next 40 years. And the state's capital city, Charleston, topped the list. Joining us this morning to discuss the report and its implications for the city of Charleston is Allison Kenward. She's a scientist and the research director at Climate Central. Allison, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Let's start by talking about this term, danger days. What exactly does that mean?
Yeah, so the National Weather Service defines dangerous heat days based on the combination of temperature and humidity, which pose a public health risk. And there's four levels of these types of dangerous days. There's caution days, extreme caution days, danger days, and extreme danger days. So a danger day is when the combination of temperature and humidity, which we, you know, may commonly recognize as the heat index, when the heat index is above 105 degrees.
And these days are fairly rare at this point?
Yeah, across the country, they're fairly rare. There's a handful of cities across the South that have a few of these on average every year. You know, we often have temperatures that reach over 100, but those happen tend to be later in the day, and the humidity, the relative humidity, isn't as high in the later part of the day. And so we actually don't hit that 105-degree feels-like threshold very often.
So as a part of this report, Climate Central analyzed 144 cities across the country. Can you just generalize for us, what did this report find?
Yeah, so we were looking at how many times cities across the country face dangerous heat days every year and what it's been like historically and what the projections are for the future. And we found that there's been a slight increase in the number of danger days over the last, say, 40 years. But we're on the cusp of a huge increase in these number of danger days. That actually makes sense because we know that the temperature is expected to rise a few degrees over the next several years. And when you combine that with the humidity, you know, we're about to have many more days where that combined temperature exceeds 105.
And Charleston, West Virginia, we topped that list, and we're expected to have the highest number of those danger days.
Right, and I think that people thought that that was a really surprising result because it's, you know, not as far south. Summer temperatures just don't hit the same maximum temperature that, say, places like Houston or, you know, other southern cities, Baton Rouge, that they might hit. But really, the dangerous heat day, you know, like I said, it's the combination of temperature and humidity, and it's the humidity in a place like Charleston that is really driving the number of danger days that Charleston's going to face.
So does Climate Central have any inclination as to why the country is going to see this increase? What does your report say about that?
Well, we know that temperatures nationwide are expected to continue to increase in the coming decades, particularly if we don't find a way to curb greenhouse gas emissions. And I'll say that our projections for future danger days assume that greenhouse gas emissions continue unabated through the next several decades. And so it's that combination of temperature and in some places increases in relative humidity that are going to increase the number of dangerous heat days.
So what are the implications for Charleston and for the other cities that have a high number of these days predicted? What does that mean for the people who live in those cities?
Yeah, that's a really great question. I think we all know when you walk out the door in the morning when it's humid and it's warm, it just feels gross. And it just turns out that when you have that high combination of temperature and humidity, the body has a lot more trouble cooling itself. Body heat can rise a lot more. So when you're doing any sort of physical activity or exercising, your body has a lot more difficult time keeping itself cool. And one of the designations that the National Weather Service points out with these dangerous heat days is that children and the elderly are particularly vulnerable, and also people that don't have easy access to air conditioning. So what people should keep in mind is that as the number of danger days rises in the coming decades, there are populations that are particularly at risk, and there may need to be changes in infrastructure and awareness that help people understand their vulnerabilities to this extreme heat.
Allison Kenward is the research director with Climate Central. Allison, thanks so much.
Thank you.
This is West Virginia Morning. It's 7:49. Areas of morning fog becoming sunny today with highs in the 70s. Clear tonight with lows in the 50s.
Support for West Virginia Public Broadcasting is provided by the West Virginia Division of Rehabilitation Services, enabling and empowering workers with disabilities to meet business workforce needs. Employer services at wvdrs.org.
Offices spend a lot of money and energy on air conditioning in the summer, but in many cases, the AC is not even doing what it's supposed to, namely, making people comfortable. The Allegheny Front's Lou Bluen reports.
Forget the tense staff meetings, forget the latest workplace romance. By far the hottest drama in the office building in the summertime is the war over the thermostat.
I wouldn't call it a war. I'd call it a dispute, and I think I would also call it an uneasy peace.
That's WESA Afternoon host Larkin Page Jacobs, and in our office here at the radio station, she's one half of an ongoing head-to-head over the temperature in the on-air studio.
Josh comes in and turns it all the way to cold for his morning shift.
She's talking about Josh Rawlerson, WESA's Morning Edition host.
But then when I come in to do my shift, it is freezing. I didn't really know how to address it. Sometimes I was a little vindictive. I would push it all the way to hot. And so when he would come in the morning, you know, he'd feel like he was boiling.
I get in here 4 a.m. and I come into the studio and it is stifling.
That is Josh Rawlerson.
So I always have to put the thermostat on full cold. And it became quickly apparent to us that we couldn't agree on where it should be set.
And that, as you probably know, if you work in an office, is not all that uncommon. There are even studies to back that up.
Well, if you look at studies of office workers and the kinds of things that they complain about, thermal issues are number one.
Cornell's Alan Hedge has been studying this issue for more than 40 years. In fact, he published the first research on a topic that's getting a lot of attention: the differences in thermal comfort between men and women in the workplace.
And what that research showed, of course, was that women were experiencing more issues at the temperatures that were then being set in the environment, which are the temperatures that still tend to be used today.
In fact, a study just published in the journal Nature Climate Change found that the standards of comfort that have endured since the Depression era are likely based on the metabolic rate of a 40-year-old, 155-pound man. And the problem with that, Hedge says, is that women, for a variety of biological and cultural reasons, tend to be colder than men in offices. But Hedge has also found evidence that the average office temp of 70 degrees in the summer isn't really doing anybody much good when it comes to productivity. He says it's always been assumed that if people are a little bit cool, they'll do more work.
In reality, we find the opposite in office workplaces. We find that when people are in an environment that they find to be too cold, typically a temperature like 68 to 70, they do up to a third less work on their computers than if they're in an environment that is more comfortable.
That would be something around 76 degrees, which Hedge says is the temperature where workers are the most productive. Which means, bottom line, we are over-air conditioning our workplaces in the U.S. In fact, geography plays a huge role in what your perception of comfort is. He's found that people from tropical countries prefer the thermostat in the 80s. And in Japan, they've had success cranking the thermostat up to 82 while relaxing the clothing policy at work. Meanwhile, in the U.S., we continue to throw away a ton of money and energy by loading up on weapons to win our own office AC wars.
One of the ironies is that when you look at the sales of personal heaters, the peak months are July and August, which is crazy. It means the company is paying money to overcool the air. And then you've got people who are actually trying to warm the environment up.
Where we're heading, Hedge says, is into an era of more and more customization. Right now, Cornell is helping to develop a technology that sort of does the inverse of what we do now, it would leave temperatures a little higher in the office overall and then provide high-tech cooling at the desk level for people who get too warm. He says it could be on the market by 2019, but we don't need to wait that long to turn up our thermostats, let people wear shorts to work, give workers desk fans, and in doing so, make everyone around the office a little bit more comfortable. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Lou Bluin.
The Allegheny Front is produced in Pittsburgh and reports on the environment. More at AlleghenyFront.org. Federal regulators are holding a stakeholders meeting in Raleigh County on a new coal dust rule. The outreach meeting for the mining industry takes place this morning at 9 a.m. at the National Mine Health and Safety Academy in Beaver. Glennis Board reports.
The new coal dust rule went into effect a year ago. The U.S. Mine Safety and Health Administration says the rule is part of the Labor Department's effort to end black lung disease caused by prolonged exposure to coal mine dust. By February 1st, 2016, continuous personal dust monitors must be used to monitor jobs where miners are exposed to the highest concentrations of dust, as well as all miners with evidence of black lung. Increased sampling frequency provisions are to go into effect at the same time. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Glynis Board in Morgantown.
West Virginia is about to get some federal help for small businesses in the state. Clark Davis has more.
Governor Tomlin announced Monday that West Virginia has been selected by the U.S. Small Business Administration to receive $200,000 in state trade and export grant funding. It'll help develop a new export assistance program under the West Virginia Development Office called West Virginia First Step, Next Step. The program will provide additional assistance to West Virginia small businesses that export goods all over the world by offsetting the price of export activities, including development office trade missions and international trade shows. Since 1985, the International Division of West Virginia Development's Office Export Promotion Program has led delegations of business owners to 30 countries. The STEP grant period will run from October 1st to September 29th of 2016. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Clark Davis.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Keep up with all the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at @WVPublicNews and find us on Facebook. Support for West Virginia Public Broadcasting's news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our director is Teresa Wills. I'm Ashton Mara.
If you're a West Virginia Public Broadcasting sustainer and you've received a new credit card or replaced one,